Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of Enablement Evolved, where we speak to enablement thought leaders and get the best practical tips to take away into your own enablement journey. Today, it's myself, Kieran, with my co-host, Hector Forward. So I'll hand it over to Hector.
Hey, Kieran, thanks for the intro. Today, we have with us a up-and-coming enablement specialist from Go Cardless, Federico. It's so great to have you. And just for the audience here, the way that I came across Federico, we were just joking before we actually started the recording, that he's actually producing original content and making mindfulness present, as well as making that shift from top performer to sales enablement leader, and what skills are required to succeed in enablement. So Federico, thank you so much for joining us. The first question I wanted to kick off with is, do you think you have to be a top performer at your organization before you can be successful in sales enablement?
Yeah, this is a question that, in a way, I guess it gets asked a lot among sales enablement leaders, particularly that are trying not to hire talent within sales enablement. I think there are pros. I would say simply that there are pros and cons on that front, right? So, generally speaking, being a top performer in sales will provide you with definitely some insights, of course, into, the role of the seller. So that will allow you to be more empathetic and also understand really deeply what kind of challenges and struggles a salesperson may be going through. So from that perspective, definitely you have the experience, you have that background. Therefore, you bring that, of course, into your role as a sales and enablement manager. And of course, that informs your decision making in how you create programs. Aside of the normal analysis you would be, running as part of your normal role. So that's definitely one thing. I think definitely a strong points for somebody to come into enablement. On the flip side, though, of course, it's very important to understand as well that, in a sales enablement role requires a lot of high level strategic thinking as well, particularly when you're operating, across, let's say, on an international scale or on a global scale. And it requires a lot of understanding of, other learning principles, learning and development, training and development, as well as coaching. So, somebody coming from the sales side, because it, of course, is an individual contributor role, might lack a lot of those other skills that may be required, which are somewhat more people focused in the sense of like really development of people, right? Not just people focused in the sense of selling. So therefore, I would say to you that the best, the best kind of combination will be somebody who has come, of course, from sales and has been successful in the role, because, of course, it will have all the, again, the insights and what it takes essentially to get there. But at the same time, somebody would have had to invest it in really, training and development, understanding and also just learning in general, coaching, other areas of sales enablement that perhaps we will get into later on down the line. Of course, this is not very always easy to find this kind of talents and also expertise. However, I would say, definitely a salesperson can be developed into some of the other areas that sales enablement manager will have to have. So ultimately, I would say to you, yeah, I think it's a great advantage to come from a sales background, not strictly necessary, but still, a big plus for an organization who is hiring a sales enablement manager or any other, director of enablement or more.
I see, really interested you here to talk about that, because when I was at the Sales Enablement Collective event in December of last year, probably one of the most commonly asked questions throughout the 2 days was, if you don't have a sales background, how can you get credibility within your sales organization? So I'm going to throw you quite a big loaded question very early on, which is, do you feel like if you don't have sales experience, top performer or otherwise, do you feel like you can actually have the same level of credibility within your sales org?
Oof. Yeah, this is the credibility piece is definitely a big topic as well, because definitely I guess one of the biggest challenges that maybe a sales enablement person coming into a new organization will have to have is, how do you maintain that? First of all, you showcase the level of credibility to the salespeople. Let's say, I guess if you think about sales enablement from a perspective of just training people, I'd say that that would be a big problem in a way, the aspect of credibility. If you have never, you know, done, let's say you've never been, you know, a sales role for a certain amount of period of time. Because then, of course, you are the trainer, you are there, of course, you are supposedly training other people on how to do a better job in that sales role. So that wouldn't make any sense. However, you can also look at sales enablement from a different perspective, which is more about a lot of the sales enablement expertise and role is about getting stuff done through other people. So there is a lot of strategic program management that has to occur. So what that means is that is about understanding what are the frameworks I need to put in place to enable the salespeople. And a lot of these frameworks are based on other learning principle, training development principle, et cetera. And then you can leverage your subject matter expert within the organization to actually, you know, develop your salespeople. And of course, you can take a lot of the expertise you already have in the business in different ways, right? They can be running training live. You've been the person, let's say, that has organized everything and has made sure that there is a framework in place that is effective. But it can also be, you know, you take snippets of what they know and everything else, collateral, et cetera. You combine that into, for example, a sort of, you know, e-learning plus, you know, pre-work plus, you know, let's say live sessions as well, Q&As, et cetera. So I think when you look at these other ways, you understand as well that, you know, when I say to you, it's not strictly necessary. It depends a lot on the approach that the organization is taking to enablement. But for sure, what I've learned is that enablement, a lot of enablement is about getting stuff done through other teams. So because you're in the middle between the sales teams, you know, management and leadership, you're also in the middle, you know, between other teams like product marketing, you're considering as well customer advocacy or customer success. You are there, you know, kind of being the connector. So yeah, that's my answer to that question.
Getting stuff done through others is a very unique take on it, and that kind of leads me to my next question: is, you know, if you're the top performing IC at a company, how is stepping back and relying on others, where, you know, maybe they're not doing something as well as you might have, or they might have a different approach to it, and you've got to give them control and access to the tools for them to succeed. What do you think prepares someone who's making that shift to get stuff done through others and relinquish that control that they once had?
Yeah, well, that's also like an interesting, you know, thing to come to terms with, I think, because definitely for experience, I remember, you know, being in general, like anyway, like somebody who thrives on his own in the sense of very independent, you know, very independent decision makers in the way, you know, I make decision on things. I guess that's a perfect trait for, you know, for a salesperson that has to act, you know, very quickly, being proactive. And also, you know, in a way, has some level of as well impulsivity in the sense that, you know, for example, you know, if you are having a tough day and things are not going very well, you still have to have, you know, the persistence to continue to pick up the phone or keep going in that sense. I guess when it comes to then moving into sales enablement, there's a lot more potential, I would say, you know, impulse control. What I mean by that is that you really have to be a bit more, you know, spend more time to think about strategically how a program has to come together and what kind of people needs to be involved and who needs to be as well bought into this, who is the sponsorship of whatever we are doing, right? In a way, there is an incredible amount of stakeholder management. Now, don't get me wrong, at the same time, though, interestingly enough, you know, you can take the transferable skills from sales, which is about, for example, you know, if you are, you know, an AE working, especially for enterprise deal, you will have to do a lot of stakeholder management. So in a way that you're engaging different people and you're gaining sponsorship as well, right? So it's exactly the same kind of process you would do in an enablement program. So in that sense, you know, you can transfer that. The only difference is that now you're doing it very much internally. So it's a slight different type of relationship that you're building, but still it's about building that sort of relationship. So yeah, that's the biggest thing I will highlight on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? So you and I have quite a similar background in terms of I went from being a salesperson, sales leader, and I made a conscious move over to enablement. And I've probably found, so I've been enablement, I mean, I've done a lot of enablement things, so I was lucky that, like you say, there's a lot of transferable skills, which is great, both from me, the salesperson, and the sales leader. But I would say, probably since I moved over, probably about 18, 20 months ago into enablement, I've had a lot of individual contributors reach out to me about getting into enablement. Mm. Now, I have like a, almost like a set of questions or a set of bits of advice that I give to individual contributors moving across. But from your point of view, what advice would you give to a sales individual contributor who's looking to make the move over to enablement if they were listening to this today?
Yeah, so I think the first advice is that, of course, asking yourself, you know, why. First of all, if you understand, of course, what actually sales enablement involves in general. And then secondly, as well, asking yourself why, you know, would you want to move into that? I guess ideally you want to be looking into within yourself in some areas where you really are invested in developing other people, and you find that something giving you quite a certain amount, you know, satisfaction and let's say, you know, joy in your role. I think these are fundamental elements because when you get into enablement, you will have to, in a way, leave what you were doing behind as an individual contributor, right? So which is now you're dedicated and, you know, strategic partner, let's say, for the salespeople that are actually selling out there, which were your previous role. So I think this is the first two things. Now, the third thing is about understanding as well, you know, investing in areas such as, I feel like from a skill perspective, right, talking about coaching. I moved into sales enablement because I had, you know, very interested in personal development in general. Then I trained as a coach, which is a big of a shift. You're not helping just yourself, you're helping others. And that kind of allowed me to make the shift into, for example, sales coaching. So I was still being a salesperson, but now I had some coaching skills I could use into the one-to-ones I was having in the organization because I was top performer. Therefore, I was helping other people in the organization, particularly new hires, things like that. Then this allowed me to slowly, gradually, you know, move into the full formal sales enablement role. So for somebody as well who's trying to make transition, I would say, try perhaps if you're really already, you know, have a certain level of credibility in organization, perhaps offer help when it comes to things like onboarding. Start to build that kind of expertise by doing this initial step so that this will give it enough experience then to get into your first, let's say, sales enablement role. Because, of course, generally they will ask still for some level of experience if you're a sales enablement specialist, let's say. So you have a chance to build that that way. Another area that I would consider as well, if I was to make in the move, is more around just general learning and development, right? So other learning, you know, principles, training and development principles, training needs analysis, for example, you know, frameworks. This is something that you can find, you know, generally in learning and development books or learning and development courses and things like that. So that gives you an idea of how people learn and how you have to create, you know, your program into a sort of a something that has an impact. Because, you know, let's imagine when you start, let's say you're a successful salesperson, you might start doing some informal training within your organization. So what that may look like, you know, you just sit down, maybe you just write a number of, let's say, notes on what you know about how to do something, right? And then you go into the training room and you deliver what you know. And maybe, you know, people ask you a question, you tell them what you do, et cetera, et cetera. If you really look deeply into that, that's not a very successful, let's say, approach to delivering, you know, enablement, because in enablement, you still need to consider a lot more things like, you know, learning objectives. So what you're trying to achieve by the end of it, you must then design the entire slide deck or e-learning, whatever, to align with those learning objectives. And you need to be very clear and focused on what are the metrics, you know, that you are trying to achieve by the end of it. So, I mean, this is very high level. There's so much else that you need to consider within that, like even instructional design principles, like how do you design? How do you, you know, emphasize points within whatever you're doing so that, you know, people remember the things that they should be remembered, because there is a lot of information there. How do you make them focus on the right things? So this is something that when you start, you won't be aware of if you are just, you've been just a salesperson. But by kind of adding these small layers, you can start developing the ability to be more impactful in your, you know, training delivery, you know, training design, etc. So I think these are some areas, you know, to consider. I don't get into, I guess, the more probably the deeper area, which is more around as well, for example, sales enablement tech stack, right? Which is, again, a very important skill, but I don't believe you need to start from there. I think it's something you develop over time, the understanding of the tech stack, how things fit together, and how you should tie technology to whatever you do as well.
How do you... Sorry, one of the things that you were talking about was all of these frameworks and helping people learn a skill set and setting objectives. And one of the things that I found when I moved into management was you know, building initial collateral, whether it be a sales playbook, and God forbid a salesperson ever reads it more than once. I'm still hoping someone does at some point. Was actually the relationships and kind of, I guess from a mindfulness perspective, how to deal with stress when you're a top performer. You know, everyone in the company is looking at you, you're managing the biggest accounts, it's end of month, end of quarter. And all of the items that you've mentioned now are very practical pieces of advice. And being an advocate for mindfulness, how do you incorporate that as you make that shift? Because suddenly you stop caring about yourself, essentially, and you're now caring about those other individuals. And how do you incorporate that moving forward as you make the transition?
Yeah, so just to clarify on that, actually, so you mean like how do you implement, for example, more of a mindful approach as an enablement person for, mm-hmm. for yourself or for the actual sellers that you are helping?
Well, for the actual sellers, because you're no longer an IC, and it's more about your team. And you mentioned that you've got all these frameworks that you bring over with you about how to coach for reaching a specific objective, but that only is, let's say, tangible metrics to do with how to move the needle on contract values, win rates, sure. revenue levers.
Yeah, no, I think it's, I understand that. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think in my role, of course, because I'm, apart from being a coach, you know, and my coaching methodology, generally, mindfulness-based methodology, I'm a big meditator myself, you know, so I'm biased in that sense, of course, but I also teach meditation, you know, to people. So I think the first reflection that we have to, you know, make a step back, we have to realize ultimately, regardless of what's your role, you know, a particular, of course, let's say we are talking about salespeople, we are ultimately human, all of us are human. So we have an underlying level of psychological processes that are going in the background, you know, that are the foundation upon which you are, you know, doing your job, right? So if that sort of foundation or, you know, those psychological processes are not strong enough, what happens is that in certain moments, and of course, again, in sales, there are a lot of stressors where you are sort of the foundation is the weakest, then is when things may start to, you know, have a detrimental impact on your performance. So therefore, you can be the best salesperson in the world in terms of what you know about your craft and the way you communicate, the way you, you know, manage expectation, the way you use qualification criteria, sales methodology, etc. But without that foundation in place, you're going to be not as effective as it could be. It's just a normal. We, you know, it's just how we are as human beings. So first of all, as a you moving into that role, you need to start thinking about the fact, you know, what's the psychology, what's in general the level of, let's say, we can talk about mental health across your entire base of salespeople, and how do I kind of get an idea where do we stand as an organization? Also, do we have a culture that supports the, you know, people talking about mental health, or at least, you know, be more open to be vulnerable, and it's not judged in the wrong way? So that's where you start from. Now, when it comes to, once you understand that, then so the next question is, okay, how do I do, you know, kind of help people to have some those psychological processes so that they support high performance? And in that, of course, there are loads of methodology out there. I have one specific that I utilize, which is extremely practical. And this has been a very important step for me, because I understand that if we talk about mindfulness, that might be a very intangible and high-level topic that a lot of salespeople might not resonate with, because generally are people that are quite, you know, practical, and, you know, they want to, you know, be proactive and get out there and get stuff done. So in that case, it's about understanding what's your framework, what's your model that you're using, and what kind of skills you're trying to help salespeople develop. In my case, the way I look at it is that there is one big quality that is demonstrated by science to be highly effective to improve performance and well-being, which is called psychological flexibility. So these psychological flexibilities are quality that can be measured, first of all. So you could you can measure by asking a certain question to the individual person before and then after whatever program you have done to kind of have an idea of how that has changed. But this psychological flexibility, the interesting part is that is underlined by six core skills, right? And four of these skills are mindfulness skills, and then two of those skills are more related to goal setting and just behavioral change. Now, when you look at it, imagine if it's as though it's an hexagon, you are looking at the different mindfulness skills. You can break, you know, you are moving from psychological flexibility to six sub skills, and then you can create programs that focus on each of those skills. Now, you know by science that if I were to be able to increase the amount of psychological flexibility that a person has, is if there's a correlation with the fact that they're going to perform better and also feel better about their job. Now, so your job ultimately, even if it's not like really crazy specific, is about, okay, creating a program that leads the salesperson to improve their level of psychological flexibility. So you can then anyway still make the argument to your leadership, to whoever is at the top, that you've been able essentially to give the salespeople psychological processes that are more conducive to high performance. So I think that's our reason with that. It's just about really breaking it down. And then once you've, you know, when you are creating actually your program, you know, that again, I ideally they want to be a mix of, you know, e-learning and also some live session, because I don't want to be like, you know, talking at people and telling them all the great stuff about mindset. It's not about that. It's more about you breaking those things down, making like very short snippet content that focuses on, you know, what a salesperson does on their day-to-day job with some examples as well. But they are all embedded in those skills we are trying to develop, right? So, and then from there, you know, again, measuring the process, you should be able to still demonstrate some of you can be like very intangible, some clear results for the organization. Yeah.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about this. And I think it was, you know, a couple of episodes ago, we had Aaron Evans on, and we had a bit of a like a tongue-in-cheek conversation or part of the conversation around sometimes enablement turns into coaching and then goes across that line into therapy, you know, and you become like a bit of a shoulder to cry on, right? And some of the things that you're mentioning now is around like mindfulness and mindset and preparing people for those sorts of situations or those sorts of feelings. From your point of view, Federico, like, where is that line for you? That, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the word should, but where could stroke should enable, how far into that world should enablement go into?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think so again, stepping back, you will look at the kind of intervention that is required in an organization. So normally this might go into three buckets. So there might be training that might be required as an intervention. And when I'm talking about training here, I'm talking about more training on the craft, right? So on actual sales skills and or sales methodology or whatever else. Then the second one is coaching, which is of course very different from training, because training is much more directive. Coaching is a lot more non-directive. So the aim is to simply facilitate, you know, reflection, discussion, thinking, deep thinking for the individual or the group so that they can come up with their own answers and really commit to the next step so that then you can track that and all that people are accountable to that. Then a third area is the one that we discussed, which is more about, you know, support around, you know, those psychological processes. Generally, there are different reasons why people don't do what they're supposed to do. So salespeople don't do what they're supposed to do. Number one might be, you know, lack of skills and, you know, they just don't know how to do their job, essentially. So at that point, training is the solution, right? So that can be training that enablement can do, but also training that a manager can do. In that case, we call it field training, let's say. But then there is a situation where instead, you know, the person is not doing what they're supposed to do, achieve the result they're supposed to do, because, you know, they are still, there is something, you know, that is holding them back, or still they haven't owned their skill yet. You know, they still require some more practice, some more like development in that sense. In that case, you know, the foundation is there from a craft perspective. So you kind of revert to coaching as the solution, because coaching in that case is simply to just get them to reinforce those ideas, those concepts, and get out there and practice, provide feedback to them. And then from there, you know, you can continue the cycle to continue developing them. But there is also a third reason why people don't do what they do, like in, you know, in a big sort of bracket, which is they just, you know, are struggling with anything. It can be anxiety, fear, you know, depression, whatever else, right? In that case, of course, we get into the realm, as you say, of therapy in a way, right? The issue is, you are going to get, of course, you know, in general population, a certain amount of people will go to therapy or will need therapy, right? But generally, it's when the problem is already there. Like in a sense, okay, there's somebody who's suffering, they say, with strong anxiety, depression, you know, there is therapy is needed. In that case, enablement, there is not much that they can do. However, when I'm referring to creating those, thinking a lot about mindfulness, or anyway, call it psychological resilience in sales or mental health, that the way I look at whether enablement can have a massive impact is more on a prevention standpoint. So how do I, before we get there, how do I provide the salespeople initially with tools so that they, when they need them, they can go there and get those, right? Before it's too late, essentially. Because then if, you know, people get into burnout area, you know, enablement, there is not much that they can do at that point, right? It's more of an HR problem or, you know, something that has to do with other section of the business, right? So enablement, has a great opportunity to add one layer on that model, whatever model the company uses, which is more about mental health or resilience in sales. And you can embed that within the normal, you know, trainings you run on, you know, on an ongoing basis, doing a way that is still though very, that's a very important thing. It's not about, you know, sitting down and meditate here. You know, that's something that people can do, you know, and of course it's a very great, I would recommend to everyone, but I know that not everyone will engage in that. You can give them other ways to, you know, practice certain skills, which are supposedly intangible, but they can make a big impact in their, in, you know, in their role. So that's, I would say, where enablement can have like a sort of ownership of that. So hopefully kind of answers your question.
So it's almost like pre-objection handling, you know, before it even becomes a problem. Yeah. And then going a little bit further into that is, I guess you can only control what's within your professional environment, right? So, I mean, let's take a horrible scenario, like someone's parents passed away recently. Right. That's not really your job, right? You've got to draw the line somewhere before diving too deep into someone's personal issues. But if it's work related to stress, because maybe they fail to meet targets, I guess that falls into the category of what you're able to control. So I'm curious, when were an individual contributor and you were at the top of your team and you were making this transition, you said you moved quite slowly. Do you think that it was difficult for others to accept you when you made that shift? And especially when we're talking about this idea of mindfulness, trust, and getting them results? Because I think it could potentially be easy for a, you know, your teammate or someone who is a mid-market AE that you were potentially working with, saying, oh, he's thrown in the towel. He's gone to enablement. He's not an IC anymore. And how that affects the relationships.
That's a funny one. Yeah, I think, first of all, I think I come back to the aspect of credibility. I think if you were, let's say, a very, in my case, I got lucky that, of course, being a top performer and having the opportunity to somewhat start to help others, that meant that when I was helping others or working, you know, with other salespeople, I had credibility, right? But also because I was very passionate about, you know, coaching and personal development, I had also that kind of spin and angle to whatever I was doing. So in a way, there was already, even for the people that knew me as a, you know, as just a salesperson I was working closely with, you know, they knew how much I was invested in just personal development stuff. You know, I would share things around, you know, books I was reading, or, you know, there were, of course, sales related, but also mindset related, or psychology related. So there was already that kind of, reputation, let's put it this way, you know, in a way, reputation about being that kind of individual. So when I made the move, for me, in my case, you know, that to them as well made absolute sense as well, because definitely I had an inclination which was different from other, you know, salespeople in the organization. Some salespeople were very much just focus on their process, you know, what they had to get done, you know, the goal they had to achieve. I was a bit more like doing those stuff, but at the same time was sometimes stepping back and doing some other type of work to just develop myself as a better person, first of all, right? Better individual. And of course, I was paying off as well, you know, in the actual sales role, because ultimately, ideally, you want to bring your whole self in as a salesperson to the conversation with your customer, because you come across much more authentic, and also, you know, genuine in what you're trying to do. So I'll say to you that I don't know in other situation how somebody else in another context might find that kind of situation, but that's how that happened for me. To your question, I think as well, an interesting thought that now pops to mind is the idea, coming back to before, to what I said before to Kieran, is about knowing why you're doing that. If you're making the move, do you have a strong enough move to make? Because then their reason is to be strong enough to counteract any potential thought of thinking, oh, you know, they're going to think that, you know, I'm throwing the towel, or that, you know, I'm not good enough, therefore I'm moving there. So, right. So it's about maintaining that, having that stable sort of reasons and why as to, you know, for the fact that you're moving. That should give you enough confidence to do it itself. But again, I'll come back to the importance of really, I think an ideal profile of somebody who's going to be very successful moving into sales enablement, somebody, of course, has some level of strategic thinking and wants to contribute on a wider scale to the organization, as a good, you know, business acumen. But at the same time, you know, they are really, again, invested in areas like coaching, personal development, professional development, public speaking as well, very important too. I loved public speaking at that time. And I think that's one of the other reasons why I moved into training, because I love to be around people, you know, in a room doing workshops, and et cetera, right? So yeah, that's what I would say.
So I've been taking a couple of notes down, Federico, while you've been talking, and it seems to me that there's a certain element of all the things that you've mentioned thus far that seems to be the common thread through everything, right? So we've got your sales experience. So let's just talk and go back to that credibility piece for a second, right? Of anyone wanting to move across, right? But take for yourself, for example, let's just say you've got a salesperson, top performer or middle of the pack. Like if you're a bottom performer, you probably don't want to stay and go into sales enablement anyway because you don't want to be around it. But let's just take an average to good salesperson. I think from what I'm hearing from yourself is if you've got that sales knowledge of frameworks and understanding, and then you like this mindfulness piece and you like the training piece, do you think it would be fair to say that from everything that you're saying, that coaching seems to be the thread that goes right through everything? And let me tell you where I got that right is you need to understand the framework so you know what you're talking to. In order to take a step across, the first thing you're going to have an understanding of coaching and how to develop people. To then take that next step into the mindfulness side of things, throughout coaching, you have to create psychological safety. You have to build trust. So then you're taking a step through that part from there. So would you think it would be fair to assume that if any, or my assumption is, anyone who wants to make a credible move from being a salesperson to going over to enablement or training or L&D, do you feel like the main place that they should focus their personal development is around coaching?
Yeah, I think it's a fair observation, Kieran. I think coaching, I do believe, is a very essential skill. And, you know, we can call it field or area of focus. And I say that because ultimately as well, if you were to be a salesperson, you were deciding to develop your coaching skills, I think that, first of all, will benefit you as a salesperson too. Because let's not forget the fact that ultimate coaching is about really getting people to find their own answers, right? But still you're guiding them through somewhat of a framework, you know, because you're trying to get them to think in a more effective way. Now, you think about it in a sales conversation, when you're having conversation in sales, a lot of the time you want to, in a way, you don't want to sell and push your ideas onto the person. You want to make them think and give them perspective so they can their own make, you know, a decision or, you know, have an idea around that. So the person is more invested in that. The same should apply to sales. So I think, first of all, let's say it's not just about, oh, you know, I do coaching, you know, I improve my coaching skills so that I can become a great sales enablement person. I will actually argue that, you know, it will make you even a much better salesperson. So there is nothing to lose doing that, right? First of all. Then, yeah, when you're moving the transition, I do believe, you know, coaching is one of the biggest probably thread, as you said, you know, common denominator across all of it. Because by becoming, you know, especially if you get a solid training in coaching, you understand how people develop, you understand how the psychology, you know, works, and then you also understand how to guide conversation in a very effective manner, in a way that is not directive as you normally are used to in general, because we're normally very used to, you know, we hear people, then we give them advice, you know, they ask questions and we give them advice. We jump into that advice mode. Coaching is very different from that, and it will challenge you as an individual as well to really step back and really don't get overly, you know, kind of caught up in your biases and thinking process, because every person as well is different too. So, yeah, that's what I would say.
What for you personally, what are the three things that you're focusing on to, I mean, you know, currently you're working at Go Cardless, one of the most successful SaaS companies in the UK, also great reputation as a company to work for in terms of company culture. And you move from being head of sales enablement to sales enablement manager. What are your key focuses about getting to the next stage at a company like Go Cardless in that size?
Sure. Yeah, so I think there is I think GoCalis is a fast growing company, of course, and you know, despite of course with the kind of market condition right now, of course they've slightly changed a little bit the balance in terms of, you know, investment focuses of the organization. I think for my next steps, I think it's of development. First of all, I'm lucky enough to have, you know, to work under a leader that is very invested in the development of the people. And therefore, that really a lot, I have a lot of autonomy and flexibility in the role, which then allows me really to have the time to, you know, really focus on what I want to learn, how do I want to develop, et cetera. So for me, I think some of the key focuses are further my understanding even more of technology that is available out there. So really, really not just about every single tool and how they work, but also how you can combine tools successfully and have a big impact in the organization. Depend, of course, aligning that to the business objective. So that's one area. The second area is around sales manager enablement. I think there is a lot of talks out there about the fact, you know, that companies don't invest enough on developing their managers. And this is very true, right? Because there's always the kind of talk around, you know, sales, top salesperson moves into management, but nobody gives them training on management. And of course, management requires such a big, you know, different, again, level of skill set that is required. And again, coming back to the aspect of sales enablement, coaching, you know, of course, as we know, in management is a very important skill as well. But again, enablement, though, plays a big role on enabling managers and creating systems that allow, give manager direction. So they know, you know, what's expected of them, what, and also what they should be doing to develop themselves. So by doing that, that's very important, because I realize, and what I've realized through experience, is that while before I was a lot focused on the sellers and doing training on them, this is good, but not good enough. Because if the, you're training the sellers, but the managers, you don't know what you're doing, and they don't even understand deeply what's going on, they're not going to be able to reinforce this. And they are the one that have to reinforce things. So this area is so super, super important. Now, a lot more my focus on that and really understanding, okay, what kind of framework do we put in place? What kind of trainings do we put in place so a manager can be more effective in their role of reinforcing some of the behaviors and the methodology you want to see? Okay, so that's, I think, number two. And you know, number three is just in general, like even in improvements around, you know, just stakeholder management, you know, internal stakeholder management, really understanding maybe a complex organization, how the different parts work together. And especially in an environment which in GoCalis is quite, you know, it's hybrid and it's quite very much on the remote working side. So well, that poses some challenges when it comes to cross-functional collaboration and, you know, stakeholder management. So I think, those are you know, really the three areas that I'm currently focused on.
Love that. I couldn't agree more on the manager piece. It's something that we've spent a lot of time where I'm at in Adela, and it's something I'm incredibly, like, hugely passionate about. And I often use a Navy SEAL or a phrase that I've heard from the Navy SEALs when talking about it. You know, like that example you gave, Federico, of a top performer moves into a management role, and and we expect them to do well. And the phrase that I always use to encompass the manager trainer is, you don't rise to the occasion, you fall to the level of your training, right? Yeah. And then when you look back and you go, actually, we've just expected them to become a manager rather than actually train them on how to do it, right? So I absolutely love that. And I suppose to bring the whole thing full circle then, and to give you this last question, Hector started off by talking about your content and stuff like that, and you produce a lot of fantastic content, which is quite different from other people. So you talk an awful lot about your story, your family, mindfulness. I suppose probably a good place to finish is probably give us an insight into why you're putting out slightly different enablement content and why people should follow you.
Yeah, that's a very good question, I guess. So, I think it's a fair as well, because I have a chance as well to express more about, you know, where those ideas come from, and it has a lot to do with my background, right? So I think the reason why I think there are, if when you think about a role you do, right, can be a salesperson or a sales manager or a sales enablement manager or so forth. I guess there are loads of, ultimately, you know, sales enablement managers, sales managers, and salespeople in the world, right? So the role is a common thing. What you can do, though, of course, in your role is about understanding. Think about what are my sort of interests and you know, things that I'm inclined to. outside of work as well. And for me, because I've gone through difficult times in my life, particularly when I moved from Italy to the UK, you know, at the time it was 6.5 years ago, couldn't speak any English. I knew only one person. I had to build relations from scratch, very different culture as well. I didn't have, you know, really any sort of, you know, working, I would say, experience in a corporate environment, let's say. So for me, you know, the only place where I could start really starting from the zero. So it was basically working as a dishwasher. So from there, I guess, because you have to rebuild everything from scratch, I've had to really find some ways of managing the amount of psychological, let's say, suffering I was going through for that big change, because of radical change. And that was, you know, got me closer to, for example, meditation or mindfulness, but just the idea of going within. So what I've discovered then is, of course, but it's just that happens gradually. You know, I've discovered there was a place, I think, of that area, that the mindfulness, let's say, within the workplace, and more specifically within sales enablement. So the way I kind of come across is that I try to, of course, resonate and relate to the role of a salesperson, but I try to bring more of thinking around the power that mindfulness can have for in your life as a whole. And by implementing, you know, that kind of philosophy in your life, you can also become a better salesperson. Because when you do deeply reflect on things, on what a salesperson is constantly interacting with people. And that requires skills such as, you know, listening, for example. Let's put it this way. Now, if you want to be like the best listener you can be, it requires your full attention on the conversation. It's not about having any preconceived ideas of what should happen, or the fact that, you know, this person is saying to me that, you know, they have this problem, my solution offers a solution to that problem, therefore now I go into telling them all about them. It's about being present fully with the other person. The other person, when you're really fully present with them, they feel that you understand them, they feel that they're listening. Is there something is unconsciously happening? So this is just one example only where, you know, the aspect of mindfulness can come into, in, you know, there. Now, the way I think my content is unique is the fact that I give a spin on mindfulness, which is not necessarily fully spiritual, which is very high level, is extremely pragmatical. So I'm trying to translate that into something that a salesperson could implement in their day to day. So I think that's why, you know, my content is different, and why, you know, that, you know, plays a core role in what I do.
Federico, thank you so much for those closing thoughts. And for any listeners out there, where can we find you and follow your content?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, you know, I don't have a website or anything, but you just can find me directly, you know, my LinkedIn. I think, you know, Federico Presicci is my name, so you can find me there. And I post pretty much daily on a weekday, at least the weekend I leave it for my life admin stuff. But yeah, so that's where you can find me.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening to another episode of Enablement Evolved. Kieran, as always, thanks. And Federico, thanks for joining us. Have a good one, everyone.